when we looked at other gay magazines, we didn't really see too many Latinos. And if you looked at the Latino magazines, we rarely, if ever, saw any gay men. So it was sort of a need, I think, to sort of bring those two elements together.
That man lured Matthew Shepard to the middle of nowhere, tied him to a fence, then beat him senseless with the butt of a foot-long pistol, and now he has the gall to ask for your sympathy?
Since Matthew has died and the trials are over, Dennis and I have been speaking out about equality issues and just trying to make people realize that people are people.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Papal spokesperson shifts child abuse blame to gay priests, gay Latinos take a glossy look at unity and diversity, and the Shepherd family's story comes to the small screen. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 9th, 2002. A papal spokesperson caused an uproar this week when he declared that gay men cannot be ordained and seemed to blame gay priests for cases of sexual abuse of minors by Roman Catholic clergy. Joaquin Navarro-Valls told the New York Times that people with these inclinations just cannot be ordained. That does not imply a final judgment on people with homosexuality, but you cannot be in this field. Navarro-Valls suggested that ordinations of gay priests should be annulled, just as the marriage of a layman who later came to recognize he was gay might be. Navarro-Valls' statement carries no binding authority and seems to directly contradict two earlier official statements by the church. Former priest and writer on the Church and Sexuality, Eugene Kennedy, called Navarro-Valls' remark an ill-considered trial balloon. But it was the first public response from the Vatican, as the Church in the U.S. has begun to take action on a series of molestations by priests.
The comments sparked widespread outrage among gay Catholics. For example, author Andrew Sullivan told the Washington Blade that what Navarro-Valls said is simply beyond belief. He has declared war on his own priests and deliberately attempted to deflect responsibility for sheltering child molesters by scapegoating good gay priests. It's the most disgusting comment I've heard from the church in years. Mary Louise Cervone, president of the gay and lesbian Catholic group Dignity USA, said, "This is nothing more than a vicious and transparent attempt to shift the blame in an effort to deny institutional culpability." She said, "The molestations are about violence against children and abuse of power and have nothing to do with sexual orientation." In the mainstream, more than 90% of sexual abuse against minors is committed by heterosexuals. Some experts believe that gay priests are no more likely to violate their vows of celibacy than their heterosexual counterparts. And eliminating gay priests could be devastating to the church. Research has indicated that gays may comprise one half of its priests and one third of its bishops.
But there are no gays in Uganda, according to President Yoweri Museveni. He made that assertion while accepting an award for AIDS prevention at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Australia. In 1999, Museveni announced that he had ordered police to round up the nation's gays. Last year, human rights watchdog Amnesty International documented reports of police torture of gays in Uganda.
And homophobic U.S. Senator Jesse Helms clarified this week that his new willingness to respond to the AIDS epidemic does not represent any alteration in his anti-gay stance. The North Carolina Republican, who had long sought to block AIDS funding, announced last month that he was ashamed to have done so little in response to the epidemic. But this week, he insisted that he was talking only about combating AIDS in Africa, not about AIDS among U.S. gays. Reaffirming his disapproval of what he calls the homosexual lifestyle, he said, "I don't have any idea on changing my views on that kind of activity, which is the primary cause of the doubling and redoubling of AIDS cases in the U.S." Helms' numbers do not correctly reflect the growth of the epidemic in the U.S. in its second decade.
In California, a suspect has been arrested and charged for a high-profile arson hate murder in Santa Barbara. Martin Hartman reportedly turned himself in and confessed this week to killing gay Clint Resetter in late February, pouring gasoline on him as he slept and then igniting it. Police reported that Hartman said he believed Resetter deserved to die for being gay and that killing him was the right thing to do. This week, some 500 people attended a candlelight memorial for Resetter, and the district's U.S. Congressmember Lois Capps described the crime on the House floor. She called for passage of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which would make sexual orientation a protected category under federal hate crimes law for the first time.
Schools in the state of Washington should soon be safer from harassment, as the state Senate this week followed the state House in passing a bill against bullying by a vote of 41-6. Openly gay Democratic Representative Ed Murray's HB 1444 was amended in the upper house to clarify that its protections apply whether or not victims belong to any of its specified classes, which include sexual orientation. The House is expected to approve the amended version, and Democratic Governor Gary Locke is expected to sign it.
Nebraska's state Supreme Court this week rejected 6-1 a lesbian co-parent's bid to co-adopt her partner's biological child by artificial insemination. The court's majority held strictly to the letter of the state's law, finding that only a biological parent's legally married spouse could adopt the child without the biological parent surrendering her own parental rights. However, the court ducked the broader question as to whether a gay or lesbian couple could together adopt a child whose parent had ceded legal status, something which might be prohibited by Nebraska's extremely broad voter-passed initiative denying legal recognition to same-gender couples.
A Scottish court this week awarded full parental rights to a gay man who donated sperm to a lesbian couple, finding that the women did not constitute a family unit. The plaintiff was named on the birth certificate, had contributed to the child's support, and had visited the 18-month-old boy often. He sued when the couple sought to limit his access. The ruling by Glasgow Sheriff Laura Duncan suggested the issue of legally recognizing gay and lesbian non-biological co-parents might be a matter of public policy to be debated by the Parliament.
In Canada, the Quebec Court of Appeal has awarded government pensions to surviving members of gay and lesbian couples. The province of Quebec, like Canada, passed a law to extend those pensions to same-gender couples in 1998, but it did not apply retroactively. The Quebec plaintiffs, known as the Quatre Veuves, Four Widows, successfully argued that the provincial pension should apply to gay and lesbian couples in which a partner had died since 1977, the year the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms prohibited discrimination. The ruling could mean up to $100,000 Canadian for each survivor now covered. It also creates a favorable precedent for a parallel national class action lawsuit seeking $440 million Canadian from the Canada Pension Plan for some 10,000 gay and lesbian survivors.
Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's visit to Washington, D.C. this week occasioned protest of Egypt's numerous recent arrests and imprisonment of gay men. The very day of Mubarak's visit, the U.S. State Department issued its annual country reports on human rights practices, saying that in Egypt, there were numerous credible reports that security forces tortured and mistreated citizens. Reports of torture and mistreatment at police stations remain frequent. The report noted that hundreds of civilian defendants had been deprived of their constitutional rights by the use of Egypt's state security emergency courts. One of those courts gave sentences of 3 years at hard labor to 23 of the so-called Cairo 52 men arrested in a police raid on a gay-friendly Nile riverboat nightclub. Human rights watchdog Amnesty International, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and the gay Arab group Al-Fatiha demonstrated and leafleted outside a Council on Foreign Relations luncheon in Mubarak's honor, claiming the Egyptian president is key to changing the situation for gays in his nation. The International Lesbian and Gay Association also issued a statement urging U.S. President George Bush to call for change during Mubarak's visit. Bush apparently never raised any human rights issues with Mubarak.
However, United Nations Human Rights Commissioner Mary Robinson did discuss the security courts and human rights violations with Egyptian officials as she visited Egypt last week. In Egypt this week, trial began for the so-called Domino of Five, with the World Organization Against Torture reporting that a reliable source had described their situation as the arbitrary arrest, detention, and torture of five men accused of being homosexual. While a growing number of such arrests are coming to international attention, a recent Newsweek feature suggested there may be hundreds of other gay men languishing in Egyptian prisons.
In the Netherlands, open gay Pim Fortuyn is being labeled a European political force to reckon with, as his fledgling anti-immigrant political movement astounded pundits with significant gains in municipal elections this week. Fortuyn had been elected leader of the national Leefbaar Nederlands movement last year, only to be deposed last month after he called for an end to Islamic immigration. Fortuyn responded by forming his own new party, Luist Fortuyn, and its Leefbaar Rotterdam arm this week won more seats in the Rotterdam City Council than any other party. Various Leefbaar groups quadrupled their city council seats across the Netherlands. Although that total still comes to just 4% of all the nation's municipal seats, surveys suggest that they will take more than 20 of the 150 parliamentary seats in May national elections. And according to this week's exit polls, voters who chose Leefbaar groups in local elections support Fortuyn over the national party that dumped him by 3-1.
And finally, openly gay British TV star Graham Norton celebrated his popular talk show's move from a weekly to a daily broadcast schedule on Channel 4. He said, "It's a daily treat rather than just a weekly fix." And slipping into industry lingo, he added, "I can't wait to be stripped."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 9th, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
The oft-told tale of a true life tragedy gets the broadcast television treatment, and you'll get a preview later in the program. It takes real machismo to confront these stereotypes that plague the many and varied gay Latino communities, but the two men behind a national U.S. magazine are doing just that. Correspondent Cindy Salazar chats with the publisher and editor-in-chief of QV to find out which way Latino gays are going.
Hi, I'm Peter Gonzaga, publisher of QV Magazine.
And I'm Demetrio Roldan, I'm the editor-in-chief of QV Magazine.
What need did you see that made you want to start your own magazine?
There was not a magazine out there, particularly in the LA area. You have the typical magazines, I won't say the names, but they didn't pertain or have any aspects that really dealt with the minority community. So that's where we came together as a group to create QV Magazine.
Especially as gay men, yeah, Latino men, I think that when we looked at other gay magazines, we didn't really see too many Latinos. You saw them once in a while. And if you looked at the Latino magazines, rarely if ever saw any gay men in those magazines. So it was sort of a need, I think, to sort of bring those two elements together.
Can you tell us what we'll find inside your magazine?
Well, if you look inside the QV magazine, you'll find a lot of different things. You'll find stories that relate to gay Latinos. They're first-person type stories, which is like the feature section of the magazine where you find people talking about their coming out experiences, relationships, or things that they faced in their lives as gay Latinos and how they deal with that. In addition, we do surveys through our website. We pose questions to our readers, depending on what the issue is about, because each issue has a theme. You'll see how they respond to whatever issue it is at hand. If they have an issue about families, we'll ask them if they're out to their families, and we'll actually pull quotes from what we ask them and include those. In addition to that, we have horoscopes, advice columns, news, cultural type events, listings. Also fashion and a lot of pictures.
Do you find people are pretty forthcoming about telling you their personal stories? Is it easy to get them?
I think most people, they want to share them. They feel good about it when they tell their stories. They're able to feel like they have a voice, that people will listen to what they have to say. And especially when they're able to articulate that in writing and see it in print, I think that they get a very good satisfaction out of that. And so I think that's cool because it's personal. It feels like it's a very closely tied magazine.
Do you have any one special message or idea that you're trying to put out?
I think it's a sense of hope in our readers to give a positive outlook of gay Latinos and to show people, you know, that they're not alone in the world, that there is something that they can have hope for, and that they can, as a gay Latino, lead a very fulfilling life. And I think having resources, and hopefully like UV, we can encourage people and push people to break those boundaries.
How much of the culture do you see?
The cultural aspects are just enormous, I think. I think that that particularly for Latinos, gay Latinos, I think the issues that are specific to them, they may not be specific, but I think they're heightened in Latino families and in Latino culture, tend to be issues of family because of the close ties that we have with familia. Anytime we do a story that has to deal with family, our readers really identify it, and we get a lot of positive feedback about it. Also, when we deal with issues like religion, particularly Catholicism, because so many Latinos are Catholic, not all, but a lot have that background, that when we deal with stories that are trying to relate a spiritual side to being a gay Latino, they identify with that. And also, I think just through a lot of our stories, if you take them out of context, they're sort of just a general gay story. But when our writers write, they tend to use a lot of settings and a lot of imagery in their writing that I think is very Latino associated. So I think that there's a cultural aspect in a lot of our feature stories as well.
Right. And I think also dealing with the machismo, the Latino culture, they deal with being gay, and the automatic stereotype is that you're feminine, and that's how QV breaks that stereotype.
I think what we're trying to show with the magazine is that we're in all kinds of different things as far as appearance-wise and in our demeanor, and also as far as career-wise and spirituality-wise. I think there's such a diversity that there is no real one stereotype. You know, we have a gay Latino doctors, we have gay Latino police officers and priests even. I mean, so I think it just transcends so many levels that we can show that there's a big diversity in our community.
Did you learn anything about the Latinos that you're trying to reach?
Wow, I think we've learned a lot. We've learned that everything from loneliness to heartache to being successful in one's own journey in life. QV stands for Quobades, is what's your journey. We've learned that people have situations that they have to deal with. And for us to come in to play and put out this magazine, we've been able to showcase that and to understand what we have to do and what we have to follow issue to issue. And that's how we come into play into getting our topics and how to address that.
I knew that we were a diverse culture. I don't think I was quite as knowledgeable about how diverse we were. And I think as we started to grow on a more national level and seeing feedback from New York and feedback from Chicago and feedback from Miami and other in Texas and wherever else, I got to see their sort of take on things and how Puerto Rican in New York views the world a little bit differently. And their culture is different from a Chicano in Los Angeles. So I think that that's one of the great things that I've been able to see. And I think that we've been able to start incorporating more into the magazine is a more broad scope of what Latinos are like. So that I think that, again, Latinos in LA, they can say, wow, this is what it's like in New York. And people in New York can look at the magazine and sort of get an appreciation for what the Latinos here in LA are seeing. So I think that for me, it's just sort of be that in-between person to sort of kind of put it all together, I think is pretty exciting.
That was Cindy Salazar in conversation with Peter Gonzaga and Demetrio Roldan of QV Magazine. You can visit their website at qvmagazine.com.
This is Michael Nava, the author of the Henry Rios Mysteries, but it's no mystery to what we're listening to. It's This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Just a week after the debut of HBO's rendition of the similarly themed off-Broadway play The Laramie Project, on March 16th, NBC will air the Matthew Shepard story, based on the true story that shocked the world and devastated a family. It stars Stockard Channing of The West Wing and Sam Waterston of Law & Order as Judy and Dennis Shepard. Toronto-based Shane Meyer plays Matthew. This Way Out's Steve Pride has some preview clips, talks with the young actor about his role, and with the real Judy Shepard about her transformation into an activist.
Matthew Wayne Shepard died in Laramie, Wyoming, on the morning of October 12, 1998, from severe injuries due to a brutal beating and torture. He was 21 years old. He was gay. The NBC television network, with the cooperation of Matthew's parents, has produced a film about his life and his death. It's called The Matthew Shepard Story.
The defense has trotted out a lot of wild theories about why Aaron McKinney killed Matthew Shepard. First, it was gay panic, as if Matthew Shepard, all 5'2" and 105 pounds of him, struck such terror into Aaron McKinney and his friend that they had to kill him. Then, when that was thrown out by the court, all of a sudden, it was robbery. Well, what is it? Is it gay panic or robbery? It can't be both. Now, they're begging for your sympathy. Poor Aaron McKinney, not that bright, unhappy, dabbling in drugs and alcohol. That man lured Matthew Shepard to the middle of nowhere, tied him to a fence, then beat him senseless with the butt of a foot-long pistol, and now he has the gall to ask for your sympathy?
I am Judy Shepard. I am the executive director of the Matthew Shepard Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepard. Matt came out to me when he was 18, and when he told me, I asked him what took him so long to tell me, because I'd sort of been working on that idea for about 10 years and had a little time to do some research and some investigation, and at that time, not much information was positive. So we were very fearful for his safety and his happiness. We thought, you know, he would never be happy. He would always be afraid. There would always be the possibility of losing his job or losing his housing or not getting housing or never finding a committed partner. We were very afraid.
But there were darker fears to come. One of the surprises of the film is that Matthew Shepard had been brutalized before. On a class trip to Morocco, he was gang raped.
The act of rape itself is really more about power and humiliation than it is about any kind of sex or affection. It's all about power and humiliation, and it's just one more form of beating down.
Hi, sweetheart. Are you okay? Oh, sweetheart.
They raped me, Mom.
It's okay. Oh, honey. I get you home. And everything's gonna be all right.
Mom.
Yeah.
I'm gay.
I know, baby.
I wanted to tell you.
Today, Judy Shepard is a full-time activist for tolerance.
When he died and we began to be in touch with the community and we were educated into what they were facing still, which was equal job opportunities, housing opportunities, even loan opportunities, we were just outraged. You know, we just thought civil rights meant everybody was included. And to find out that that wasn't the case was really very frustrating. So since Matthew has died and the trials are over, Dennis and I have been speaking out about equality issues, legislatively in particular, and just trying to make people realize that people are people. These things don't define who we are. They don't define every aspect of our lives. And we're just trying to make the general public at large aware of that. And when I speak, yes, I do get mostly the choir, but they talk to people and they talk to people, and the ripples just continue on.
One of the men who killed Matthew Shepard was an Eagle Scout. The Boy Scouts would not have welcomed her son, and the irony isn't lost on Judy Shepard.
The official policy of the Boy Scouts encourages prejudice, and not just against gays, but religion and gender. What they are saying to their young people is that it's okay to feel prejudice and hate against a section of our community. Well, it's not okay. And the very fact that some institutions, churches, whatever, continue this prejudice, in particular against the gay community, makes society at whole think that it's okay to hate and perpetrate violence against them, that no one will care.
St. Matthew Shepard was abominable in the eyes of God.
My name is Shane Meyer, and I portray Matthew Shepard in The Matthew Shepard Story, which is set to air on NBC. I knew that it was going to be an extremely difficult subject matter to deal with. And I wanted to do it right, A, because I knew that it's going to be watched worldwide, and B, Judy Shepard, hey man, I'm portraying her son. He was the opposite of what these people were that did this to him. He was happy to be alive. He was full of positive energy. He was always willing to accept different people in his life. He was always very kind and warm to everyone. For this kind of thing to happen to him, He was almost crucified on this fence in the middle of beautiful Wyoming. And there's another scene in the movie where Stalker turns around and looks at where he died, and she says, this is the last thing he saw. And the camera shows a beautiful, beautiful countryside with the beautiful, gorgeous Wyoming sunset setting in the background, and that's how he died. And that's just another irony of it, you know?
You know, it's okay. I mean, we're gay, too.
I thought you guys were gonna jump me.
No, what?
Well, you followed me in here, and I just thought... Well,
we're not gonna tell you out there.
No, I guess not. Hey, listen, it was nice meeting you guys. Take off.
Yeah, okay then.
What, you leaving already? It's early.
Yeah, you know, I got class tomorrow and I'm tired.
College boy, right? Good for you, man.
Hey, you know, we could give you a ride home if you want.
Really?
Yeah, it's not a big deal or anything. Yeah?
Okay, yeah.
All right then.
The Matthew Shepard Story stars Shane Meyer as Matthew, with Sam Waterston and Stockard Channing as Judy and Dennis Shepard. It airs Saturday, March 16th on NBC. For information on the Matthew Shepard Foundation, point your internet browser to www.matthewshepard.org. This has been Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Judy Shepard. Since Matthew's death, his father Dennis and I have started the Matthew Shepard Foundation. The goal of that foundation is to educate and raise awareness. After Matthew's death, we discovered we knew very little about what was going on in the world regarding hate and discrimination. We also discovered how powerful one person can be in making changes in our world. I want you to know that you too can make a difference if you choose to make the commitment. You can change the world. You can do it as an individual. You can do it as part of a group. You just need to make the choice. Hate is a learned behavior, and we can unlearn that behavior. We can live our lives in love if we make the choice. If you get the message, share it. Don't keep it. And thank you again for listening.
Doesn't my mother cry like everyone? My father grieves for his lonely son. And isn't the air in my lungs the same? So who cares whose arms are more wrapped up in? Who cares whose eyes I see myself in? Who cares who I dream of? Who cares who I
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Cindy Salazar, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Chris Allen. What Matters was written and performed by Randy Driscoll, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help This Way Out stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening on KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, to NUR Newcastle, New South Wales, WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.